Hello, and welcome to Manga Explaining, the show where we recommend great manga to folks who haven't read much manga before. Hosted by Deb Aoki, David Brothers, Chip Zdarsky, and myself, Christopher Woodrow Butcher. Follow along with our show notes and reading list at mangasplaining.com, and check out our newsletter and digital publisher at mangasplainingextra.com. This week, hi, I'm Christopher. I'm hosting, and I picked an off-the-cuff book at the end of last season, or at the beginning of this season. I can't remember. It's been spread out with recording a little bit. I was like, oh, I saw that on Twitter today. Let's read that for Manga Explaining. So sometimes that's all it takes. The book is Dogs Red by Satoru Noda, who did Golden Kamuy, which was a book that we read pretty early on in the show. And it suffered, I think, from its proximity to the excellent Vinland Saga, which we also read, I think, the week before or the week after. And great book, but Golden Kamuy ultimately became a very different sort of thing. And Dogs Red is a different thing again. Dogs Red, for those of you who are not entirely familiar, is, and I can't believe I'm saying this actually, a hockey manga. Yes, that's right. It is a manga about hockey. Ice hockey, actually.
Why can't you believe that you're saying that?
Yeah.
It's, well, get into it a little bit more in the series, but this is not Satoru Noda's first ice hockey manga, actually.
Mm.
And to be honest, I can't believe it got translated and picked up and is in Shonen Jump. It hasn't been printed yet. It's digital only, but we'll see about that.
Yeah.
I'm actually just on the Shonen Jump app, and the entire description for Dogs Red is, Rao once chased figure skating glory. Now he chases redemption in the ice hockey rink. And it's like, yeah, you can tell that the publicity department has not gotten to this yet. There is no print version. There's no like two paragraph intro description of what this is about. Let me first say this is available on the Shonen Jump app in chapters 1, 2, and 3, as well as the newest 3 chapters are completely free for you to read. All the ones in between are not free for you to read. And Shonen Jump, I think, is $4 a month now. They bumped the price. Inflation, you know how it is. Got to move those pixels and it costs more every time. This
smaller and smaller tubes.
Smaller and smaller tubes. You think we can afford tubes from 3 years ago?
Wait, it's still $3.
Is it $3 still?
Yeah.
Oh, well, sure. There you go. Let's say that the US dollar is considerably higher against the Taiwanese dollar that I'm paying with, or the Canadian dollar that she was paying with.
I had to re-sign up and it was $4 for me. So
yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. But for our Canadian listeners, you know, $4. This is a hockey manga. This is a shonen, should have been seinen hockey manga. We'll get into that. This is a really interesting series overall, I think, with lots to talk about. And I want to start off on a sour note and ask Chip what he thought first. Because
when
I picked this book, I remember on the episode, I was like, I'm going to pick Dogs Red. It's a hockey manga. It's really interesting. And Chip's like, I hate hockey.
I love your impression of me.
It gets different every time. There's no consistent Chip Zdarsky, which I think is what makes the impression, actually.
It's just so mean.
You're a mystery. I hate hockey. I'm the Canadian who hates hockey.
I don't care about hockey.
I believe you use the word hate.
I don't know about
Play the
that.
Tape back, my friend. Chip does not care for hockey.
You got different tapes in your head, man.
Yeah. Luckily, David has the masters, so we'll see. But no, honestly, I as soon as I picked, I was like, oh, it never occurred to me a kid from Barrie hates hockey. But I guess you did get the hell out as soon as you possibly could. So yeah, I actually do want to know, Chip, what you thought of this one right off the bat, because I think this is a really interesting pick for all of us.
Well, first of all, thank God I love figure skating.
Oh, okay, good.
Actually, I hate figure skating, too. I mean, I just don't care for it.
Yeah. Well, play that back. I hate figure skating?
No, I can't have that get out. My editor, Allison O'Toole, is a giant figure skating fan. All of her vacations revolve around figure skating competitions. She just
amazing.
Wow.
So I'm sure she's listening to this episode.
She's born to make history.
Yeah. Allison, I love figure skating. I quite like this. I thought it was super fun. Like, the sport doesn't matter in these.
Mm.
That's a big kind of common element throughout sports manga. It's got very little to do with the sport. I mean, you get the introduction to it and the rules and stuff, but it all depends on how it's conveyed, right?
Yeah.
The drama of it, and it's all the character stuff. The rules are kind of like whatever. As long as you know that, you know, someone's done something wrong, or this is how they get a point, or this is how they stop them from getting a point, no matter what the sport, it feels very secondary. So I quite liked this. It was super fun. There were a few moments where I actually like laughed out loud. You know, I think we talked about, like, you know, reading the first seven chapters. So that's what I did. I got a little bit into eight, and then I was like, okay, that's enough for the homework. So we only kind of get like a sense of all the characters in here. Like you definitely get the feeling of the main character. And frankly, my first laugh out loud moment was in the first like two or three pages when the chorus of fans give you the tragic backstory. I'm noticing that a lot in manga, that like they really need to hit the ground running. So like they always have somebody just like tell you all the backstory within like the first two or three pages, just so you're caught up. Which, you know, I get why they do that. It kind of does a bit of a disservice because it doesn't really help you feel much for the main character because it's kind of conveyed so early instead of like witnessing that journey.
Yeah.
But again, like it's, I'm assuming this is a Shonen Jump.
Yeah.
Oh, yes. Thing. Sorry. Yeah. Jump Plus, so, I think. But yeah.
So they've got to hit the ground running. So there's a reason for doling out that information so quickly. But yeah, I quite liked it. I love the art. I thought it was like some really refreshing layouts. I think the last few books we've read, I haven't really kind of glommed onto the layouts. I didn't think they really serviced anything beyond just the simple narrative. The art's great. I kind of love the stylistic choices for the characters. It really makes it feel unique. This artist needs to learn how to draw lips, though. This is something else. Like, there's one character. The problem is I don't have page numbers. But, like, I don't even know what's happening there. I don't understand. It's not,
if you go actually right to page 7 of the first chapter, there is a girl, one of the girls in the stands that's in love with him, if you look at it. And it's like, those lips are literally like wax lips, like that you would see that child. And it's just like, yeah, this dude's not drawn. Like, I feel like he's, Noda Sensei's maybe getting those out in about 3 seconds.
It feels like an homage to an older character. If that makes sense. Like, there used to be like a central casting type of guy with that kind of face, like a bumpkin or something.
Yeah.
So I've seen those lips in One Piece. Obviously, there's like the various racist ones in Dragon Ball.
Yeah.
They show up a lot in the manga. It's kind of interesting. And it's always kind of like a comedic shorthand, it feels like.
I want to get into that too, because I do think it's like, it feels like a drawing shorthand to me, but obviously I'm not as qualified to talk about that.
Oh my God.
Like, that's grotesque. Yeah.
Yeah, that's weird.
Like, it just doesn't make sense. I just don't know what this divot down is. And take a screenshot of this for me, of my disgust at these lips. That's just so weird. It doesn't feel like, there's no malice there. It's not like, oh, women with lips or whatever, I've got a problem. Like, no, it's just like, okay, I don't know. Like, so much of this style of manga just doesn't feature lips, so it's just like, it's not a thing that they draw.
Chip, what chapter is that, at least? Or did you just screenshot it?
It's got to be the first one, because it's him in figure skating mode.
Gotcha.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the only real downside to the art, which is a very minor thing. I quite like this, so I don't know if that lives up to your start with a sour note.
It does, actually. It's perfect, because I hated it, and I am so glad that you like it.
Really?
You hated it?
No, I didn't.
Oh.
It would be so good if I did, but no, I had more and different problems with it than you, but I think I liked it overall. But, you know, we don't have to talk to me first here. Yeah, we'll kick it over first impressions. Deb, what did you think?
Oh, I'm always in the pocket for a sports manga. I love a good sports manga, especially one that teaches me about a sport I don't know much about and generally don't care much about, but it kind of brings me along on the ride.
Mm. Yeah.
It's interesting because I probably know as much about how hockey works, the rules and all that stuff, as much as the main character, the figure skater, did at the start of the story. So it was kind of nice that it started at that ground floor. You know, in that the first game, he makes every possible mistake, right? He gets every possible foul you can make, like hooking and touching the puck. And he goes, what? The other guy touched the puck? And he goes, no, you're not supposed to do it this way. Yeah. So it's like, oh, that was kind of fun, right? You know, what always made Satoru Noda interesting, you know, beyond like, you know, Golden Kamuy, it's kind of a heavy story, right? Kind of gory, historical, lots of high drama. But what always made it interesting was he always injected these moments of like bizarre humor. And just kind of like this, I'm grabbing my nuts and I'm just saying, you know, ha ha ha, deal with this, people. So it's the level of humor in this story, and it just ramps up. I promise. Mm. After chapter 8,
yeah,
right when they start dealing with their high school coach.
Deb, did you read all of the available chapters? It's 23 as of time of recording.
I read it every week when it comes, every time a new chapter.
Oh, wow. Oh, you're just like caught okay, up on in. It too. Wow. Ooh, nice. Yeah. And David, what did you read? Actually, we should probably talk about that because the story does go through a bit of a change after what would be the first volume.
I read up through chapter 7, like you mentioned.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So like that first little story arc-ish.
Mm-hmm. Oh,
okay. Yeah, no, it's a different book, and it's going in a different direction, which I think is really interesting.
It's fun, though. It's a classic sports setup, right? Like the underdogs, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The first chapter is these underdogs that are the students that were left behind in a school that's going to be closed down.
And yeah.
They're kind of all the misfits and the you know, the small kids, the shy kids playing against the top team that is the middle school team, right? Where most of the more talented kids from their school went to.
So there's even the coach. I like the fact that the coach went.
Yeah.
Like we're out. That was actually really funny. I'm just like, oh man, like they're really kind of piling it on here.
Mm.
Yeah. So that it's definitely like they are such underdogs that they're even described as like toy poodles going into battle. Oh,
that was a good drawing too. Put that drawing in.
Yeah,
the show
that was really good. Yeah. Toy poodles in battle was actually an amazing drawing.
So it's just kind of it's a fun thing. I guess what one of the weirder things about reading this book is, and I don't know Golden Kamuy well enough to do a one-to-one comparison, but a lot of the character drawings are like characters from Golden Kamuy. So it's a little weird.
Yeah, absolutely. I did find that a little bit jarring because these are supposed to be middle school kids. Like they're supposed to be 14, maybe.
Yeah, I know.
They don't look that at all. This guy's 15.
I'll say in my second last year of high school, Brampton got like a middle school team, like or not a middle school team, but like a call up team, like a AAA team. And so all of a sudden there was all these like kids that transferred to our schools. So they could be in the range for that team. And it's like, yeah, these are the largest like 17-year-olds you've ever seen playing the game. But I did find that there was only maybe the fans and the like two little kids that are like on the team, like the team captain of the like Mighty Ducks team, which I've been calling them in my head. And like look legitimately like, you know, 14-year-olds, and everyone else is like a Golden Kamuy, like battle scarred, like 40-year-olds, 30-year-olds, which is like real weird when you're reading this book. Cause it was a little bit odd. It would be like, wait, this guy is this giant dude is like supposed to be like maybe 15, like probably 14 instead of like 26 or 27. It was a little bit weird, and like especially with the faces, a little bit odd because it's not how kids are normally caricatured in manga. Kids are definitely caricatured in a different way.
I would actually disagree because this is, or I don't want to like step on the end of Deb's bit though.
No.
So I think that I agree that like he looks like a ridiculous for a 15-year-old, but he looks exactly like a Shonen Jump 15-year-old. Like he looks like Jotaro or like Kenshiro's not supposed to be that old. He's not like a teenager, but he's like a young 20-something guy. Like he looks like a Shonen Jump hero, and those guys always look ridiculous.
Absolutely. But he also looks like the way a 15-year-old thinks they look.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the things about like kind of stories aimed at this age group. It's just like they're all the heroes. Like I thought I was basically Spider-Man when I was like 15 reading Spider-Man.
Sure.
Like I would look at those images and be like, yeah, he looks like me. I style my hair like Peter Parker. I don't see what's different about us. So I think there's that element too.
Yeah. Mm. So that part's really fun. And so I had a weird experience with this book, strangely, because normally Shonen Jump is very straightforward. But I think because I knew that you liked it, and I think I knew that Deb liked it because she talks about it online sometimes, and Golden Kamuy in the background, I was like, oh, I had one picture in my head of what this was going to be, and this is the complete opposite of what I was expecting.
Really?
Really?
Yeah. Like
I didn't know that. What did you think it was going to be?
What were you expecting?
Like last week I used like competent with exclamation points as a way to like get across like how well done, you know, like the book was. This time like unsophisticated as a positive.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was expecting something really like layered and dense and like kind of tense. Like he's going to have like a lot of like angst and, you know, anxiety about like his station in life. There'll be a lot of like mature themes. And this is a shonen manga. So yes, he does absolutely have anxiety, but it's like of the, I'm a big idiot trying to learn to play hockey, like during my first hockey game kind of thing.
Yeah.
So I was expecting something more like complex or sophisticated, whatever like kind of word you want to use, instead of like the perfectly good hockey manga that this is. Mm-hmm. So I was kind of getting in my own way while I was reading it, kind of expecting more of like a Golden Kamuy mixture of like seriousness and humor. Well, this is like 80% humor, 20% serious, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
Or maybe not that tilted, but
also 20% training montage. You're getting the 20% training montage.
Yeah. And so I'm a person, everything I know about hockey, I learned from the Pro Stars cartoon in the 90s and pro wrestling.
Oh, wow. Nice.
So like I got nothing, you know, as far as this goes. But yeah. I liked how they zoomed past most of the explanations. Like it's clearly a story by someone who likes hockey, but is not super interested in like teaching someone how to play hockey.
Yeah.
I think he already made that manga. It was called like Speedama. Like they reference it later on. Yeah, actually I'm right there with you. I think I wouldn't have maybe classified it that way.
Yeah.
But I was also expecting a layered sort of story and a hockey manga and like an explainer manga in the style of Golden Kamuy. And I did not get it. It is not this manga. To the point where the stuff that Chip liked at the beginning, where they're just like exposition dumping his tragic backstory.
Yeah.
I was reading this going, what the hell is going on? This is terrible.
I didn't like it.
So awkward. Well, you laughed at least because I did not laugh.
Yeah, it's funny.
I was legitimately annoyed at it. I was like, why are they, what? This is the most.
It was like Deb reading Die Dark.
I was like, what is going on? Why are you all recapitulating things you all know to each other in the middle of a loud hockey game? This is not real. This could never happen. You can't even hear the person next to you while you're at a hockey game.
It became very evident to me that like the quote unquote tragedy in the story is going to always be undercut by humor. Just to kind of let you know, it's like, not that he's laughing at himself or laughing at the trope, but like, even like, when he wins and then he loses it.
Yeah.
Like it's comedic. The fact that he slashes the banner behind him with a high kick with his skate. And then
he's
like,
genius.
There's a scene of him. Like he's on the ice and dragging somebody behind him. And then the chorus of girls are like, what's happening? And there's one just like, barfing.
Yes,
I love
yes.
her.
Like I love it. I laugh. Cause it's like, it's not taking itself seriously at all. Even though it's like, this is the character's tragic backstory and this is the result of that. But it's just like, yeah, I quite enjoyed how it kind of played with that and didn't play it up for just like heartstring pulling. It's just like, you know, this kind of story, you know, the tragic backstory, here it is. We're making fun of it kind of right away. Whether it helps the story in the long run, I don't know. Cause I only read the chapter 7. I'm assuming it's kind of, Deb, you'll know, does it get a bit more layered deeper as it kind of goes?
I will say that I have a little note here that you don't notice it at first, that the story takes place technically in 2010.
Yeah, I saw that.
What's the point of that, right?
Yeah.
When you get to chapter 12, 311 happens.
Oh, yeah.
The Hanshin earthquake and the tsunami that happened and all the stuff that we know about after that now, 10 years later.
That becomes a big factor in what happens next with the teams, right?
That's fascinating.
It shows the scene where they're in a classroom and the shaking starts happening and the aftermath of everything. So that was an interesting choice.
Mm-hmm.
Golden Kamuy is basically a historical manga, right? I mean, that prison is real.
Yeah.
And that period of time in Japan is real. Now, how he ramped it up for dramatic effect, that's another matter altogether, right?
Yeah.
But it's interesting because I don't know why he did that, why he made that part of the story, but there is that aspect to it.
I think he excels at historical fiction, like placing characters in context and kind of making it bounce off each other. Because a lot of what was fun about Golden Kamuy was that feeling of like, oh, this is like, you know, the Wild West of Japan, analogous to the Wild West of Japan, I suppose.
And then teaching us about Ainu culture, right?
Yeah.
Kind of like teaching us about Ainu culture in the way like he's teaching us about hockey, right? Look at what the gear looks like.
Yeah, that was one thing I latched onto with this when I was busy getting in my own way with the story. I was really appreciating the art and sort of the things I'm noticing that Noda focuses on in his stories, like Hokkaido and the Ainu culture. I love when writers and artists have like their like pet subjects that like they keep coming back to. Like there's jokes about Garth Ennis doing stories about like guys in bars, and then like a one shot about Ireland, you know, and like he's done it, you know, several times to earn his reputation.
Yeah.
But it's something that he clearly cares about and keeps kind of iterating on and refining. And this feels like that in terms of showing us another angle of Hokkaido, showing us another angle of what like Ainu culture means today. So I'd love seeing that pop up in the book. I'm like, yes, this guy is like a true sicko. Like, this is his thing.
You know? I love the regionalness of it because, you know, like kind of similar to like how in America, like a lot of stories take place in Los Angeles or New York.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And maybe if you're lucky, sometimes like Miami or I don't know, maybe Dallas or Chicago, the big cities, right?
Because media is run by the corporate elites on the West and East Coast.
It's true.
But it's the same, a little bit similar in Japan, where a lot of the manga artists live in Tokyo. They may come from other parts of Japan, but they're largely living and working every day in Tokyo.
They don't even live in Tokyo. They live in garbage suburbs of Tokyo. And so all their stories of school kids are like set there. And then they move to the big city, which is Tokyo. And it's just like, oh, man, another one. But yeah, I get it. And Hokkaido, the difference between me visiting Hokkaido before and after having read Golden Kamuy was huge, actually, because I suddenly had a lot more context for the different train stations we went to. I went to the Ainu Museum with Keith and Minori. That was amazing. And like getting to understand some more of the culture and more of the history and more of the place was really, really cool. And I think that I wouldn't have had that without that manga. I think that's what explainer manga does really well. I think it was maybe weird for me because I grew up in a hockey family, like not playing, but oh my God, every single game, the game was on at maximum volume.
Really? So
like, not a single thing in this was new to me in any way, shape or form.
Yeah.
Wow.
But, and in fact, it felt basic in an off-putting way. So really? I was curious. Yeah, sure. It felt like, yeah, man, you can't hit people with the stick, bro.
I didn't know that.
Why would like, that?
like it's not like you're out there and they give you weapons to hit each other with. This is an American like, Gladiator.
Kind of.
No sport. No sport has that. Every single kid who ever steps on the ice in any field knows that like you don't raise your skates because you'll cut someone, you'll hurt someone unless you're alone out there. And he's a figure skater. He knows that. Like you don't go and hit people with a baseball bat in baseball. The baseball bat is not to take out the catcher when you get to the plate so you can, you know, get an extra.
You are describing a more interesting game.
That's fair.
Yeah.
I found the explainer stuff. And then I was just, again, I think I was in my own way, like David was saying, where it's just like, this isn't for you. This is for people who don't know what ice hockey is, who are reading Shonen Jump in Japan. They're the Tokyo kids and the kids across the country.
But also those were played for laughs. Like that's also part of it. Like, yeah, it's explainer, but also like every instance was like funny.
Yeah. But it was also 4 pages. It wasn't economical storytelling. There was a lot of beautiful economical storytelling in here. And that hit like a thud for me.
Interesting.
Wow. Hmm.
I've got a point that relates to your thing about explaining hockey.
Yeah. Yeah.
It sort of leads to my point about drawing. So we should probably get your overall take on the book before I take over with small stuff.
Tremendously complicated.
Wow.
I felt like when I was reading the first chapter, I actually messed up real bad in picking this. I thought it was going to be a bloodbath of an episode where we just had to go in on Satoru Noda for like an hour. And then I actually read everything. I read all 23 chapters because it is relentlessly readable as a book. And I think it's really good at turning pages. I think that the explainer stuff gets better as it goes, actually. Mm-hmm. I think the biggest problem with the book, and this, you know, this is critic bullshit, so it's not, I don't think it's worth anything, but I do think that he, as a person who wants to tell a story, is fighting against the venue of the story and then the format that the story has to take place in order to tell the kind of story that needs to be told to be successful. Because he's done a 7-volume, like, it was a 2011-2012 Spinamarada hockey manga back in the day. And then he did Golden Kamuy, which is not about ice hockey. And it went for like 10 years. It went for 9 years. So like there's definitely, he's coming back and he's like, this time I'm going to make it work. And so there's stuff like in the training montages where one of the characters is like, this is stupid. You're denying us all water. That's not how muscles are formed or built or whatever. And the hockey coach is like, you know, that's what they're saying now, but in 10 years it'll be different. So I don't care what I do to you now. And it's like, yeah, you want to have this old school asshole coach character. And we've seen this character before. It was in the drawing manga by
Blank Canvas.
Yeah. Where there's an old school like coach in a tracksuit who's just like awful, right? Being awful to this character to make them a stronger you know, insert whatever the Splinter manga is about. And they're trying to have this character to have it, have their cake and eat it too. And it's just like, no, that's not how it works. And I feel like there's a lot of straining against the format in this. I feel like he wants to tell a story for grownups, but you can't do that in Weekly Young Jump. And there's a couple of bits of hand waving that happen to like say, ah, don't worry about it so much, Christopher. And it's like, no, it's not, that's not who Christopher is, unfortunately. But I still liked it. Like, I still think it comes through. My problems with the art as well. Like, there's some stuff that is, you know, hitting a weekly deadline's rough. Lips seem to be taking the full forbearance of the weekly deadline in this book, which is like a real problem. And there's some visual comics shorthand that he uses that is, does seem out of place with his style, because he does caricature some characters like Golden Kamuy style, like in his very unique way, idiosyncratic way, and mm-hmm. some in like a general casting kind of way, which David has referenced a couple times on the podcast. And it's like, yeah, I feel like he's trying to walk a pretty fine line, and he gets he's not checking his blind spots. He gets checked more often than he doesn't on some of this stuff. And I think that's, yeah, I want to see where it ends up, but it's still like, you know, I had no problem after that first chapter, which is the roughest chapter, I think. Mm-hmm. I still had no problem with it. And best gag in the series, I'm going to just to like end on a positive note so we can go around and say, best gag on the series is a little bit later on. A lot of stuff from the first couple chapters comes back by the time chapter 23 rolls around. The shirts that his fanboys, fangirls, I guess, in the stands are wearing with his face on them, like Go Rio kind of shirts. Mm-hmm. He's wearing one later on because it's the only clothing he has. And so there's a character who's yelling at him, but can't keep looking him in the eye because he keeps looking down at his shirt and back up and down. And they're like, the top one is the real one. They have to like yell at him. It was a perfect gag where he's like wearing his own fan shirt. So that was my favorite.
Oh, that's great.
So, yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah. Nice. So, Favorite funny moments? Anything? Any responses to what I said? What are you guys thinking?
There's so many good funny moments. I wildly disagree about chapter one. I think chapter one's very funny and very interesting and well drawn.
Mm-hmm.
But just looking at kind of screen grabs that I took. First of all, this drawing of a cat.
The cat. The
is
cat.
Probably one of the most, it's one of the most accurate, hilarious drawings.
That's
of the cat.
What I was
great
saying.
Introduction of the cat trying to get in through the doorway. But also just when he's first on the ice in the town.
Like beautiful. This drawing that he put out when he first steps up to do his figure skating routine, and he's exuding so much power that like it's like that Max L ad where people's faces are being blown back by the sheer power of whatever. That's a great drawing. Like that's a tremendous drawing. I wanted more of that.
There's some great drawings, but one of my favorite funny parts is when he's first on the ice in the town where those nets are. Like the couple of kids go, that dude's a figure skater. One's like, he's pretty good. And then the little girl goes, his every move emanates a sense of tragedy. And the other kid's like, what the heck, Tomoko? I bet he bears an immense weight of suffering.
Like, I screen grabbed that.
Like that sums up the book to me. It's like, it's that hilarious meets tragedy. Like, like he's clearly he's playing the tragedy for laughs. Like the fact that this kid is calling out that is so funny to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and like I don't know, just like there's the little bits too, like the end of this one chapter when they're asking the weird coach who's just like perched, which is also hilarious. He's just like perched on the table or whatever.
It's such a delinquent manga thing to me.
It totally
they,
is.
They somebody asks him like, you know, who's the player you got your eye on? He's like, there's this one guy out there, blah blah blah, and he goes. The close-up where he goes, and he's weird. as Rue does like the weird sideways skate thing. The one thing I did not like in this are the arrows. The arrows drove me nuts. Because they're so superfluous and they would just kind of take me out of the game. It's very similar to that period in hockey. Even as a person who doesn't care for hockey.
See, you know about this. You got to explain this well.
When Fox picked up NHL hockey and started broadcasting it, their big concern was nobody would be able to see the puck. Even though CBC here in Canada, we've played it for years, and you watch the puck. It's very easy. Mm. And so they made sure to have like some technology where it like highlighted the puck wherever it was, and when it would be shot, it would have like speed lines, like colored speed lines coming from it. It was like... stupidest looking thing I've ever seen. And so these arrows really kind of bring me back to that. It's like, oh, they're not going to understand what's happening, so I've got to use these arrows. Like, I'm sorry, but like manga invented speed lines. Like you can figure out a way to show the direction of a thing
with
speed lines. Like a lot of the times it was just a puck with like an arrow pointing to where the puck's going. I'm like, just have speed lines behind the puck. What are you doing? So that was my one kind of major complaint about this.
I loved it. It was like seeing someone admit defeat, you know?
Yeah. Also, maybe inadvertently funny, the fact that like there is now a manga version of Sidney Crosby, the NHL player. Just in the explanation of someone who also pulled that same move, that made me laugh.
I love that. I love the Japanese speed skater who's in this. There's just like a lot of... That was actually when I caught that this was set in the past, when there was like, and he won the Stanley Cup this year. And it's like, oh, I guess it's 2010. That's weird. It did not occur to me is when
Does
I caught
that. That happened every time? Every year?
Sorry, well, it's a 2010 Olympics, they mentioned.
Oh, the 2010 Olympics. It's not the Stanley Cup. My bad.
Yeah, he scored the winning goal in the 2010 Olympics.
Mm. David, what was your favorite gag from the first seven chapters?
I weirdly loved the arrows.
this is a rare Chip David disagreement.
David's taking his contrarian pills today.
No, I agree that they're like not great, but they're such a... Like, they're trying so hard to make this story, like, come across to an audience that might not get it and might not understand what's happening.
Yeah.
And, like, the arrows are, like, the last stitch, like, man, like, if this doesn't work, I don't know what's going to work. Mm. Kind of a vibe.
Yeah.
Haikyuu did this a lot with the directional sound effects, where they would, like, basically have sound effects pointing to where people were moving.
Okay. Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. And it kind of worked because they were much more designy. You can see sometimes some of the sound effects are stretched in Dog's Red, for instance. Like when he kicks the puck backwards, like there's like an arrow, you know, on the ka sound.
Mm.
So I thought that was really interesting. And the fact that so many of the shadows are just kind of like blocks on speed lines.
I like that. Even, that was cool.
Mm.
Like such an interesting visual vibe.
Yeah, I actually took a screen grab of the one. I really love this page.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just as
I never noticed that.
Yeah, the chunky kind of shadows were just such a neat stylistic thing.
I want to know if they will be like that in the print edition, because I wonder if that's like a deadline shortcut, for instance, or like an actual kind of like creative choice. And
it would be just as easy. I think this is harder to do than frankly just like regular shadows. Regular shadows can just be very organic.
Like a blob, yeah.
You can fudge it a bit, yeah. The fact that they manage this in both perspective.
Yeah. So lines. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
But so the thing that's as uncool as that is cool is like you can't do a manga with face mask and then not draw the face mask because you want to show all the faces.
Mm. Yes, yes.
That was kind of driving me like up the wall while I was reading. Not up, that's extreme. It was funny while I was reading it, let's say. Because there's no way around it. Like you want to have characters emoting, but you want to have like the correct equipment. So it's just all these like partial face
like
masks.
That. We're just it just kind of fades away.
Yeah.
It's very funny.
And it doesn't really look like it's a cutout. It looks like almost like there's open hockey face masks now. Like a football helmet or something.
See, I didn't read it that way because I was down with that visual language to not have the grids in front.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It shows up all the time. It's I think the first chapter of Fist of the North Star, they do it with like the prison cell, or maybe it was JoJo, one of the two.
Yeah, maybe because I'm just used to that visual language.
Yeah, no, I could read it, but I was like,
but
there
like,
should have been another way.
Me.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the face mask, like you can still, probably should have just drawn the grids because you can still make out the faces.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they're not that tight. It's not like, you know, like fencing masks or anything like that. Like, but yeah, I thought that was pretty funny.
I think that's a consequence of setting it in the past because those kind of grid style, like wire style face masks were, you know, 2010. Mm. And now everything's clear, like clear plastic. So if he set it now, he could just have like a full on plastic face mask.
They're actually, as of this year, they're basically the same thing as the Apple Vision Pro where they project the face on the outside of it in a weird. I want to mention one other thing I liked.
Mm-hmm.
And Deb posted this in our exclusive manga explaining Slack earlier, which is the use of the faces in the balloons to indicate who's talking, which they use a lot for people talking off panel. Mm-hmm. I noticed like,
Yeah.
It's cute. It works for shonen. Mm-hmm. Maybe it doesn't work for seinen, if that makes sense.
Yeah. It's a manga thing.
But in Golden Kamuy, he would use that one drawing of that character's face.
Yeah.
The bald one. I can't remember his name, but they would, he would just use that same art as clip art, like for everything.
Just drop it in. Yeah.
Yeah.
He would put it when like they were naked, right? Like he would put it on the privates. He was naked. He would just put like this one generic face of this character everywhere.
And that guy's face is in Dog's Red. He's on one of the opposing team.
Oh, really?
Like the square patch on his in the side.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's funny.
Nice.
I like the part when, I think it's in chapter 7, where everything that can go wrong for him goes wrong.
Oh, that's so funny.
Skates break, and then the stick breaks, and there's a scene where the grandfather is like, I think it's like chapter 7, page 8, where the grandfather's like going, oh! Like, at everything that goes wrong, his grandfather's just reacting.
It's such a funny scene because, like, when the first skate just breaks, I'm just like, oh, yeah, he's wearing old equipment, and that could happen. That actually could happen. And then, like, the next thing that happens is, like, the stick all of a sudden shatters. And then when he actually shows, like, the other skate where it just, like, explodes. Like, I don't even know what happened there. I was legitimately laughing out loud. It's like a cannonball run
type of thing. Where
it's, yeah, it was like an airplane-level joke.
As he's just trying to make his way across the ice, too. It's just, like, there's so much. Yeah. Yeah, they really infuse a lot of comedy into this, and I quite appreciated it.
And there's a really good bit, I think, in a couple chapters after that, where you realize that what just happened there, which was one of the funniest parts of that chapter, is actually deeply tragic when that equipment degrades. And it's like the tragedy and the comedy. It's like, we'll spoil it because it's all free chapters anyway. Mm. But it's like, yeah, that was his grandfather's equipment from when he was in the Olympics. That's why he kept it, because he was on the U.S. He was on the Japanese Olympic hockey team, and he lent it to his grandson to keep playing. And it's all destroyed now. It was like his Olympic souvenir. And you're like,
oh, hilarious.
Okay, that's another thing.
Hilarious.
Figure skaters and hockey players don't have the same physique, right? Like, am I dumb?
There's they don't have it. Not every hockey player is like a big dude, much to my chagrin. But every figure skater has to be light in addition to powerful. Like, you can't have any extra bulk at all. Yeah. So there are some players that are a lot smaller, both physically, like not as big, but also shorter, that play in the NHL and do really well, mostly because of the kinds of different positions you could play. It's like how, it's like in Haikyuu, the orange liberal, kid is the little guy, but that's okay. Cause he's light,
most flexible. So
flexible.
He does the defense thing. So he's not doing the jumping.
It's not out of the realm of possibility, but you do train a different way.
Gotcha.
And they get into that actually a little bit later when he gets really checked for the first couple of times. And it's like, he's got all of his strength is for speed. None of it is for being able to stand up if someone who's like, 50 pounds or 100 pounds heavier, they're just like, waxing into the boards.
Yeah, I've been there.
And they talk about that. Yeah.
Okay. I appreciated the equipment part about it being his grandfather's. I thought it was funny that it fit perfectly. And it was like, how cool. Like, it was leather, yada, yada, yada. But I think it was also maybe the most seinen moment in the manga, because it sort of felt like the part where you're like, older craftsmanship. Like, someone made this by hand. It's got like, it has lived a life. It has been through some things. And due to that fact, it is like to be respected. It's like valid or, something like that. You kind of see what I'm getting at.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, it's amazing.
And then it immediately falls apart.
Yeah, and then he takes it too far because it's been 40 years.
That's so good.
I mean, the way that it just falls apart, like, ridiculously, the blades break. Like, whoa. Oh,
so funny.
He is such a good comedian or comedic writer, whichever.
Yeah.
One art point that I wanted to make sure I got on the show.
Yeah.
Do you think this is drawn digitally or, like, by hand?
Definitely. 100% digitally. He actually is a big proponent of digital drawing, and it's part of his deal.
Yeah, you can really tell the backgrounds and environments. Like, that's like just a totally different style almost in a lot of cases.
Christopher showed us a page where he was skating in chapter 1 with like, and he's blowing the audience away. He's got like his hands up and the screen tone is going crazy.
That is chapter 1, page 10 and 11.
The screen tone on this page like made me pause. This is 10 pages into the chapter. I'm like, okay. Is this real screen tone or is he like faking it? Because it looks so good and messy. And throughout chapter 1, there are a couple of other pages that I grabbed. One with the horrible lips that Chip mentioned. The facing page of him kind of like ascending into the air. Like, that has some sick textures too.
Mm.
there's real good drawings in this, is what I'm trying to say. And they kind of push the digital analog like barrier in ways that I think are really interesting. Like they do traditionally analog things, but then push them in digital ways. Like the way the screen tone arcs off his fingers is like definitely digital because it's so triangular and mathematic. Yeah. But it looks like it's been cut by hand because there's still white showing behind it. Yeah, so like truly a book for sickos.
He loves drawing.
I just wanted to point this out again. First of all, just the drawing of that skin coming apart is so gross. But then like, you mentioning the fact that his grandfather had it in the Olympics, like makes this page just even more beautiful and dangerous.
Oh, yeah. Yes. And he goes to close up
with the grandfather. Silent too. The silent fact that it's silent. It's masterful. It's such a funny, tragic, beautiful drawing.
Oh man.
The grandfather.
The drawing really does a lot of like the heavy lifting for some of these jokes, I think. Like the emotions come across, like the body language is so good.
Yeah.
The perching coach is such like a trope in manga, but like it's it's rare to see like a coach, I think, like an authority figure be that guy. They're usually differently weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, so good job, Chris.
Yeah, good pick.
His panel layouts too are just like this is chapter 1, page 23, where the gate is like exploding out of the panel. Kicking things around. It's kind of neat.
Yeah.
No, it's really good layouts.
Deb, I think we missed it. Was there a gag that you particularly liked in this book? A funny bit that was because I think from later on you actually shared one about a truck that received some unwanted attention.
Yeah. Okay. So I wanted to mention that you know the coach who shows up in chapter 4 for the high school. Mm-hmm. He seems like this benevolent older man who's like you know kind of rough around the edges, but kind of stern, and he's a serious coach, right? In the later chapters, we found out he's an absolute monster.
Like in the bad way?
I think you would find him endearing. No, I think you would find him endearing. I think, yeah, you'd find him endearing. But I know people like this that are sports coaches that are like, oh, anything I do to make a 14-year-old into someone who can destroy an opponent is okay.
Yeah.
And he's kind of played for laughs at the same time. But if you actually take everything that he does out of the context of this manga, it's like, oh, he should be in jail.
Actually. Yes.
Yeah.
Making them do like these extreme training runs and carrying big, heavy logs through the forest and then telling them you can't get water unless you win the race.
Yeah. Like, it's crazy.
Pretty bad.
Yeah.
But the point where it's like, oh, this is the Golden Kamuy guy is one of the scenes in later chapters where they're part of the trainees, they have to carry these logs as they're running through the forest. Is it up a hill, right? Because that's part of their endurance training. Because when you're in hockey, you have to carry the stick around. So of course you're going to have to carry a big log. Whatever. Yeah. Anyway, the main character gets a log that looks suspiciously phallic.
Suspiciously?
That is considered to be the lucky one, right? The lucky log.
Nice.
The legendary lucky log that he has to carry around. He's like, why does mine look so weird? And then there's a payoff when a bear attacks their little training camp. And yes, I'll leave it to you because I'll leave it to the reader to figure it out. But trust me, that training log has a payoff.
It goes through some things.
If this wasn't a shonen manga, that would be like the filthiest to be continued we've ever done on the show.
It's technically not a shonen manga. Jump Plus is kind of a seinen.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, sorry. It's in Weekly Young Jump. So it Young is technically. Jump.
Oh, okay.
Like sort seinen. Of seinen, but like the jumps don't make any sense. I wonder if, know that.
You can be a little bit dirty in Young Jump. I get it.
16 plus. Well, it usually means sexy, but not for him. This is the least sexy, but most like aggressive manga. It's pretty fun.
Yeah. So to give it context, Young Jump on the cover usually has a gravure model.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sexy young lady for the boys to ogle. Just like Young Magazine, in which Akira, the most depressing, overly violent manga ever ran. Yeah. At a certain point, it's like, you know what sells magazines? Not putting manga on the cover.
Who knows?
Young Adam. Think about it, Chip. Marvel Comics is missing out by only doing this with the swimsuit issues once a year.
They had trouble.
That's true.
They had trouble.
Yeah.
That had girls in bikinis on the cover, and that actually sold pretty well.
They were okay. They were young too. I didn't like that at all.
Yeah, it was a little weird.
Yeah.
I didn't photograph it.
It was also,
I
did it was, sell it, was, it though. It was young Aunt May, so.
What? To, oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Yeah, Marissa Tomei would like a word. Young Aunt May is very, very attractive as a maybe not that young, but.
Yeah.
No, I do think putting a very sexy young lady reading a copy of Batman on the cover of Batman makes more sense than having Batman on the cover on his own. And you should bring that to the higher ups at DC.
Look, there is a very real reason why there are so many variant covers for Batman that feature Catwoman and not Batman.
Oh, is that the secret sauce? Okay.
They sell. Yeah. It turns out they sell.
Who knew?
Yeah. Mm.
Who would have thunk, huh?
But so, Christopher, did you have a favorite drawing in this one, out of curiosity?
Yeah, actually, that very first drawing. I didn't see, here we go. I didn't see the humor in that drawing when I first saw it, when he's like about to do his performance and it's like, you know, his hands and the energy emanating off of him. I was like, oh man, he's going all out with this drawing. This, like, it's going to be really powerful and important. I didn't catch the exact expressions on the people in the background who were just sort of like blown away. I didn't see the humor in the drawing. I only saw the power and the like strength. And so when I got to Tomoko saying like his every move emanates tragedy, and it was just like, oh, I'm reading the Tomoko version of this actually. And that is not, this is not going to be the perspective of the rest of the book. So yeah, once I like, but I did find all the hockey stuff really clumsy in the first chapter. But yeah, that first drawing of when he's doing his figure skating routine, it's actually really interesting. The whole drawing, the drawings of that whole section. I once got really nice feedback from Joe Quesada on a review I wrote of Daredevil Volume 1, or of the one that he did with Kevin Smith, because he took Daredevil and made him move in a different way. Like, he did a lot of studies of like gymnasts and things like that, and ballet dancers, and trying to give Daredevil a movement style that was less like a boxer and more like someone who would be like leaping through the air and moving and things like that. And I found that his drawings were really amazing on those Kevin Smith, those first Daredevil 1-8, really, really good. And Joey Q later was like, hey, you wrote that review. That was really good. No one else picked up on that. And I was like,
thank you.
But looking back on it now, I think it's less integrated because American comics like you got to show off a little bit more, right? Like, it's a little bit flashier if you're doing Daredevil. Whereas in this, you can tell, like, the moves that the character's doing are a routine. Like, it's different, like, you know, but it never feels show-offy. It feels like we're seeing his performance in a way that is energetic and fits within, like, he's always touching a panel border. We don't get a fully, like, all the way back kind of a shot where we get to see, like, how good this guy can, you know, draw a photo ref. Even the shots that are like that are always showed. There's one shot that's one of his moves is shown on a camera screen or a TV screen or, like, through a camera viewfinder and not just him on the ice. And there's something about the integration there I think is really interesting, where when he draws, he is interested in the drawings existing in their world and not outside of their world. Because superheroes have to, by nature, exist outside of their world. They're like superheroes. It's like, like they're bigger than life. Whereas his drawings, even when he's doing stuff that is really phenomenal, he only rarely pulls it out. Like, he only rarely breaks the panel border with the skate, and that's only as like a filmic technique when the skate's coming right at you. And I think that that's really interesting about the art here. You know, it set the tone in the first chapter. The art in the first chapter is really good, and it's honestly stays very good all the way through. The bear running away was the only shot where I was like, you could have drawn a bear a little bit better than that. Drawing animals from behind running away is really hard. It's like a Lion King problem and a bunch of like animation illustration problems, because you don't have access to a lot of live animals to draw. But no, there wasn't any part. And I found the backgrounds less pulled away or less stylistically problematic, I think, maybe than Chip mentioned. You mentioned that was you didn't love that.
Well, it's just it's from a different comic. That's all. Like, I think the first establishing shot of like the cabin in the woods, I'm just like, oh, that's like either drawn by a completely different person or it's by machine, and
it looks like SketchUp, a
combination of both.
Yeah, it looks like SketchUp to me, with the trees in front actually being drawn by him. That I didn't like that tree. And then when stuff is obviously photographed, like the night shot of Hachinohe or something, like one of the towns, like from above, like obviously, like that's a clear photo ref, but. Overall, I felt like the world was really real and lived in, and like the characters were interacting with it in a really good way. And that's one of the things that I think I appreciated most, is that it was always ground level. But it was also one of the things that was like, I kind of wanted it to be a little bigger at points, if you know what I mean. Like, I wanted it to be a little cleaner. I wanted it to be a little bit more like super heroic, I guess. But it's not, again, it's just about aligning my expectations with the book. And I think I got there by the end.
Yeah. Hockey's a hard thing. Like, the figure skating, obviously, you can do more of that. Hockey is a hard one to make exciting visually. Like, having seen, you know, that slam dunk movie, and just like the things the human body can do in basketball versus what the human body does in hockey, which is a lot of it's this. Just kind of like punch forward with stick, and like sometimes you pull it back and sometimes you hit the stick to the puck. He definitely seems to be doing his best to make it kind of visually interesting. And like, a lot of that, again, comes down to his layouts. His layouts are at least provide some dynamism in those scenes. But the figure skating, you can really rely on the human figure a lot more.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
A lot more, yeah.
A great example of that is when, I think it's after the goal falls under the ice, when the brothers are fighting, and they're doing like a hockey fight on the ice. Mm. And it's drawn like a hockey fight, which is something that's just really close range and mostly like, I don't know, forearms and elbows, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's not like an exciting looking fight. It's just like two guys kind of standing close and their arms doing stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's great. There's a one really good wind up and punch, I think, in the last couple chapters, 22 or 23, something like that. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, yeah, I agree with you. It's very realistic, to the detriment of it being an exciting drawing sometimes.
Yeah.
But the excitement does come. There's a lot of good slams and hits. Mm-hmm. But thinking about it, really, Deb, I'm really curious about this, because you're the person who, even though I picked this book, has been reading this book every week since it was announced. What do you love about this? Like, what keeps you coming back every week to check this book out?
Just those little moments of that's not what I expected.
Mm.
You know, like, obviously I read a lot of sports manga just because it's my little feel good hit. You know.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm rewatching Haikyuu again for probably the sixth or seventh time, because it gives me that little warm fuzzy that I find relaxing. But the part I like about it is that there's some subversive humor in here. It gets serious. It's packed with action. It's like he's obviously reusing character designs from Golden Kamuy, which is kind of weird for me. Mm-hmm. But he is just so, just when things get kind of serious or crazy, he injects this moment where you're like, oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Or I just have to screenshot and go like, look at this. Oh my God, what? Yeah. I wish we were reading that chapter where the purpose of that log that has been for four chapters gets revealed, and like, oh.
I should have assigned all 22 chapters. I don't know what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Really. Probably didn't want Chip to murder me. Yeah.
But I think the first seven chapters, because it ends on that ragtag team winning, is a nice first arc, right?
Yeah.
Well, they still lost. They lost
like 30-1.
It was a moral victory. Yeah, it was definitely a moral victory.
Because they made the bet. They made the bet where, like,
they got one goal, right?
They couldn't be on the ice ever again. Yeah.
I mean, you know, sometimes I think it's also like the details on chapter 2, page 20, where Rose, he's sleeping in his grandfather's house for the first couple nights, and he's surrounded by water bottles. Now, if you know anything about cats, or I don't know if this is anything else.
Oh, yeah.
But in Hawaii, like, if you want dogs or cats to not poop on your lawn, you put bottles of water on your lawn.
Oh.
When the sunlight hits the water bottle, it makes this bright light that keeps your dogs off your lawn.
Mm.
Cool.
Yes. Anyway, it's a random little joke.
Yeah.
I don't know. Did you guys know that?
No, I
knew that, but I didn't get that joke. And then the next panel, after he's surrounded by the water bottles, is the cat behind the water bottles staring at him like death.
Yeah,
assumed it was like a barrier wall or something like
that. Yeah, and look, the cat looks like...
Just like pure evil.
He looks like he has a haircut. Like he has a little snow part.
Yeah.
That's
good.
I kind of love the fact that this guy knows cats. Even though this is a very minor point. I mean, and the screenshot that I shared in our chat, you know, I picked it. Because one of the guys in the stands jersey says Aoki.
Oh, he does. Yeah, oh,
there you go.
Super good. So there's
all kinds of, like, and then he talks about Seiko Mart, which is the Hokkaido only
7-Eleven chain.
Yeah, 7-Eleven chain. Yeah. So there's all kinds of like really charming details, little wink and a nod. I just love that he's having fun.
Yeah.
And he's making it fun for me to read. Sure, I mean, I don't agree with everything. Some of it I think is stupidly over the top.
Mm.
You know, like there's that moment where he's on the ice and he's like, oh, you know, I trained for the Olympics, all this stuff. And then he goes, oh, woe is me at the last panel. And it's like, ah, that's so cute. And it's just, I think it's just kind of this nice rhythm, humor to it. Like that nice mix of humor and action and underdogs and just like, and against even in all that formula, he puts in something that's uniquely his. That's like, that is his personality and humor. And you're just like, ha ha, that's crazy. I just enjoy it.
That makes perfect sense to me. And I think manga readers like Deb will maybe really enjoy this, which I guess, unless we've got a Little Brothers segment, AKA Sweat the Small Stuff.
No, it was the arrows.
Yeah. Okay. It was the arrows. Okay, good. Then let's do some final thoughts on Dogs Red before we wrap her up and go to the break. Chip, prove me wrong yet again. I appreciate it.
I live to do it.
That's why I come here every week. What are your final thoughts?
I think it's super charming, very funny, well drawn. I quite liked it. And even going through it again with you guys, like I keep finding more and more things that I really enjoy about it. So it gets a two thumbs up from me.
David.
Pretty good. That's all the thumbs. Yeah,
that we know of.
I also give it two of Chip's thumbs up. It's very funny. It isn't the like elevated reader kind of approach that you would see in something like Golden Kamuy.
That's not the right
phrase, but you know what I'm going for. It's a straight up like shonen-ish manga, you know, a junior seinen manga, let's say.
It feels like a sophisticated creator creating an unsophisticated work. So it's not just the fact that it's unsophisticated.
Oh, wow.
Because he's still infusing it with like really kind of sophisticated techniques and stuff.
That's exactly it. You can feel the creator behind it kind of doing what he wants to do, but also that he's capable of like a lot more if he chooses to take the story in that direction. Like I assume like volume 7 or 8, like people are going to be crying in the streets over what's going on. You know, one of those.
Yeah.
We didn't bring it up on the show too much, but the kids are a true highlight of the book. Like the way they run the live stream for the hockey team. The way they keep like breaking into like very Baroque, like ornate speeches about what's going on.
Like Oompa Loompas.
Yeah, they do. He's not great at drawing children.
Yeah, they're really funny.
Or maybe he's the best at drawing children. I don't know.
Drawing them like little goblins.
But yeah, very good.
Deb, final thoughts?
Oh, it's just a hoot. It's not the same thing every week, right? So it's not like going to be funny. It's not going to be like Nozaki-kun, right? Which is always reliably a certain degree of funny. It's not going to be like Yotsuba, which always has this reliable level of slice of life charm.
Mm-hmm.
This one takes you on a ride. And it kind of like, every chapter, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know whether you're going to get this dazzling sports action, or you're going to get this wild, like masochistic teenagers running through the woods being chased by a bear stuff. Like this madcap.
Yeah, sports action.
This madcap kind of twist, right? Or you might be charmed by the fact that the cat acts like a cat, acts like a real maniac. And if anyone has gone on a video call with me knows that I have two manic cats who will zoom across the screen in the middle of a call.
There's a cat only cut of manga explaining out there somewhere.
There's kind of. I think it's just kind of masterful. I mean, and again, a sport I knew nothing about, or I only vaguely knew, like, okay, there's a puck and they're trying to get into both sides and they get into a lot of fights. But the rest I didn't know. I grew up in Hawaii.
I grew up in Georgia. Yeah, same boat. Like, we had a hockey team, and no one really went to the games.
There was no such thing as any kind of hockey in Hawaii, right? So this was all kind of a big old mystery to me. But it's charming.
As sports fans outside of, or in hockey playing areas, we really appreciate it when games are in places like Georgia where no one gives a shit about hockey, because the tickets are way cheaper and you can always buy a ticket. It's way cheaper to buy a ticket to the Leafs out of town than it is in town. Usually by like thousands of percentage points. It's wild.
I've never been to a Sharks game.
Even though the Leafs haven't won a Stanley Cup since 1967.
Yeah, aww. Ticket prices just keep going up, and it's sold out every year. It's just awful.
Wow.
You guys don't understand that kind of pain because you got like Golden State Warriors.
Weirdly, like... I do know the Leafs thing because it came up on wrestling recently.
Oh, really?
What? Yeah. It's, I should probably explain it offline. There was a main event where two guys who were from the area ended up wearing rival jerseys, like the Leafs and Bruins, maybe.
Oh, yeah. They hated Bruins.
One guy was like, you're going to do exactly what Toronto always does and lose or something like that.
Whoa. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a deep cut for some of the... Actually, wrestling is huge in Canada, so that's probably probably played really well.
Yeah.
So, final thoughts. This sums it up. So, like I said, he did a... Noda Sensei did a 7-volume hockey manga back in the day called Supina Manarada. And it turns out that that was him misunderstanding what a move was called in English.
Really?
Yeah, and it comes a little bit later. It's called a spinorama, and it's when you do a... almost like an ice skating, like a figure skating routine where you get up to the net and you do a quick, like 270 degree spin. And instead of, you know, hitting the puck into the net from the side that the goalie's expecting, you're doing it now from the other side and you have to spin super quick and bring the puck with you. It's actually really, really hard. It's called Spinorama. Yeah, he did not know that. He didn't know English. So he called his manga Spinamarada.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that what that means?
There's a gag in, I think, chapter 17, I'll put it in the show notes, where he's like, one of the characters is like, yeah, you do this figure skating move, and it's actually in hockey. It's called Spinorama. And the lead character, Rao, is like, oh, Spinamarada. Yeah, I'm going to do that. And they're like, the guy's off the ice, like, no, it's called Spinorama. It's not called that. And he's like, yes, Spinamarada. I'm going to do it. And it's just like, that's the joke. That's the joke. That's the humor. Yeah. That's what this series is. Him recognizing... like him being able to poke fun at himself and take like 4 pages to do it, not economical storytelling, to tell a joke that is really, really just for him and his fans, but still tells you something about Rao, still moves the story, still explains a hockey term and a hockey move. And it's a sophisticated idea in an unsophisticated way. And I think we hit the nail on the head. We're literally perfect at this. They got to put our quote on the back of volume one. Read it on the Shonen Jump app if this sounded like a fun time for
maybe
you.
Maybe it'll be Canada exclusive.
I was going to say, we need some sort of Canadian publisher to pick it up.
Put the offer into Shueisha. I wonder what Udon's doing. We'll see.
Imagine if it's hit like Drops of God for hockey.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It already maybe is. We read Drops. Oh, we read Drops of God. I forgot. We read that first chapter, and it's equally as silly. Deb loves it equally as much, so let's do it.
Before we wrap this, I know we're doing picks, so we're probably not going to do shout-outs, so I just want to give like a related shout-out for the movie Slapshot, the 1970 movie with Paul Newman.
Yeah.
I'm not a sports guy, really. It's one of the funniest... it's my favorite sports movie of all time. It's so funny. It's got such a great 1970s ending that you just wouldn't get away with today. Not in like a, oh, you get canceled. It's just like story-wise. It's just like, it's so fun and so funny. It's so violent.
So violent.
So I'm this is a recommendation for Mr. Brothers, really.
I'm on it.
Slapshot, yeah. And Paul Newman, he's just charming as hell.
The kind of movie if you're hanging out and your dad's flipped through, he's like, oh, Slapshot's on. And then that's it. That's what we're watching until it's over. No matter where in the movie it is, you watch it to the ending.
Yeah. I like Slapshot. It's that and Happy Gilmore are like some of my favorites.
Oh yeah, Happy Gilmore is also one of the top sports movies of all time.
It's given me a really slanted idea of sports, but whatever.
Yeah. There's no explainer going on there, I'll tell you that much.
that hasn't been an episode among explaining. We're gonna take a little break. Be right after the break. Thanks for listening to us talk about Dogs Red.
Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com.
And we are back, and Chip gave a lovely shout out. So I think we're going to skip shout outs this week. Sorry if anyone else had any burning Curb Your Enthusiasm they need to talk about yet again. Let's just go to picking books. And who better to start with than Mr. David Brothers, who's you know, got a very elaborate scheme this season for having Chip pick books.
I should have come up with like a clever name for my scheme, the Brothers Method or something like that. But the short version is I've got four categories. There are funny books. There are books that are left of center, like kind of like weird in some way. There are books that are art focused, where it's just like good drawings all the time. And then there's David genre, which is usually violence or robots, sometimes criminals too. I've got six books in each category, and we get Chip to choose a category and then a number, and then we do that book. So, Chip, do you want a funny book, David genre, left of center, or art focused? Last time you did funny.
Okay, yeah, I was going to say, I think...
And you picked an out-of-print book that Christopher can't get, so good choice, Chip.
Let's go left of center this time.
Left of center, all right.
Yeah.
One, two, three, four, five, or six?
So four.
Four. All right. So this one is a fight starter, let's say. It's called Is It Manga? Yeah.
Is It Manga?
Is It Manga? Yeah. So we had the bit, I think last season we brought in books that were like, we talked about books that are kind of manga adjacent.
Okay.
But like The Boxer?
Yeah. The Boxer's one. Adam Warren's work would be another example.
Yeah,
I've got two comics. They're both very short. They're both available online for DRM free download. One is a Kamen Rider fan comic called Fighting Storm. It's available on itch.io. It's, you know, pay what you want. Very cool. It's by Theracinian and drawn by Brian Naughton. And essentially, it's just a Kamen Rider story. It will probably bring to mind the Kamen Rider manga we read in like season one, maybe.
Makes sense.
Very easy to follow. There's very few words, so I think it'll be kind of cool to look at from the Is It Manga perspective. And the other, I realize now, is actually maybe by a friend of yours, Death Transit Tanager by Carl Kerschel.
Oh, yeah, Carl.
Yeah, Carl's great.
So this was on like Kickstarter or Twitter or something. I saw it and was like, oh, Carl Kerschel doing like Metroid comics? Let's go. I really want to see this. Then I got it, and it was like genuinely great. And feels manga. Like it's a lot of screen tone. It's in black and white. The first chapter is actually free on his website, carlkerschel.com. And I haven't actually said what any of these books are about. Or no, I explained the Kamen Rider. Death Transit Tanager is sort of about someone who, a young woman with a strange gift, travels the galaxy to help lost souls find their way home, let's say. And then it kind That's of lovely. Goes off from there. So I think it would be fun to talk about these and see if they feel like manga.
Okay.
Or if manga is even a coherent category.
Whoa.
Yeah.
All right. It's going to be a long episode. All right. Deb, do you have one?
Yeah, I do. And I'm a little conflicted because we've done a lot of very guy-centric works so far.
Yeah. Woo.
Ooh. So I got to counter-program you a little bit. I wanted to kind of throw out a few. One, we could return to a series that we did before and finish it out, like we did with BL Metamorphosis. There's one that's a current favorite of mine that has kind of an interesting twist of romance and crime, mobsters.
Okay.
And then there's a really cute, kind of similar to Dogs Red. It's set in a small town, and it's kind of a slice of life, but it's an interesting character drama.
Okay. I mean, this is like I feel like a subsection of me picking, but I'm gonna go for the romance and crime because I want a little bit of romance in my life, frankly.
Okay, well then we're going for Yakuza Fiancé.
Oh my god,
which I love a lot. I think it's super. It's well drawn. It's basically about two high school kids. One is, I guess, kind of like the grandson of a mob boss in Tokyo. The other one is a granddaughter of a mob boss in Osaka. Their grandfathers are good friends and rivals. They get engaged to each other. And what's really fascinating is when she moves to Tokyo, she's a firecracker. Like she does not take any shit from him. Yeah. And in a really fun and interesting way. But as the story goes on, their relationship, and because he's kind of vaguely a sociopathic. Like she kind of sees beyond his facade of very shallow smiles. But as it goes on, there's also this high drama going on with the different crime families and succession battle. It's drawn really stylishly. The romance is great. The character development's really fun. It's one that I didn't expect to be so addicted to, but I'm reading up to the latest chapters on K-Manga. really fun.
All right.
Mm, cool. Hmm.
As always, you could have just said the title, and that would have been enough. Chris?
Since we're all doing complicated asks this week, I have a I have a deal that I would like to strike with you.
A deal?
If I give you a short book to read, can I get you to host an episode? Because there's something I wanted to read, and I wanted to actually go back and read, even though we're adults, volumes 3 and 4. And I'm like, I'm not going to, because I would love to read more of that. But it's like, that's kind of was Chip's pick. Those were Chip picks, I believe. And it's like, well, maybe he would pick 3 and 4 to host with if I picked a short work. And then that way, it's not like I'm giving him too much homework. So I think that's a pretty fair deal. Honestly, you get to read a book, that series that you know you like, and you'll just plow through anyway. It'll be very quick.
Okay, so sorry, I just want to make this perfectly clear. So you're saying if I don't accept the deal, you're going to
I'm just
going to
pick all three.
I was going to say, you're just going to pick something too long to read?
Yeah, yeah. There's a... Have you heard of Buddha? It's 8 volumes.
All right, I accept your deal.
All right, so you're going to host, even though we're adults, volumes 3 and volume 4.
Yeah.
That's great, because I've been waiting to, I want to read those. I've been saving them for the podcast just in case. So the book I'm going to pick is a genre that we all love and was actually hinted at, I think, by Eric Friedman, like 2 years ago. So we're finally getting to it. It's called She Loves to Cook and She Loves to Eat. And it is a gentle romance between two ladies. One of them is like sort of a bigger girl and she's, you know, strong and tough. And then the girl that loves her and loves to cook for her. And there's pancakes on the cover of the first book. It's going to be a little bit like Our Dining Table. It's going to be very sweet, what I like to call meatloaf manga, comfort food manga. It's by Sakomi Yuzaki. And yeah, it's going to be a delightful, just a delightful little read that is going to be fluffy and great. And we're going to get through it. We're going to read the whole book in about 5 minutes. It's going to be delightful.
And we haven't done Yuri yet, right? So this would be our first year.
We haven't technically done Yuri yet, maybe. I don't know. I'm sure other people.
Is kind of
even though we're adults is like Jose Yuri, but this is like a full-on ladies romance book. I did actually have another one that was, I wasn't kidding. I had a 3-volume series that had a beginning, middle, and end that would have been very satisfying. It also would have been 700 pages. This is much easier.
I love this approach.
She loves to cook and she loves to eat. I think under normal circumstances, that'd be my number one pick because that sounds great, but I need to punish you for this. So it goes straight to the bottom.
Fair enough.
Yakuza Fiance, it just sounds too fun. So that's going to be number one. Which puts David number two with his Is It Manga doubleheader.
Nice.
Even though we're adults 3 and 4. I'll put that after Chris's because it depends on how Chris's goes. How angry I am at him. As to whether or not I do that directly after.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
That's all right. Fantastic.
All right. Good job, everyone.
Good job. Thank you. I like that in season 5, we have entered into the blackmail portion. Well, I like that.
All three of you have now come up with like complicated things that I have to like unravel to like.
We're
like 110 episodes in. Like it was
gonna end up. I know. David's got like a whole number of random systems. Deb is like, well, actually, you have to choose between multiples. And Chris is making deals.
I can't wait until we're back in Japan next time. And he'd be like, all right, we've rented out this whole temple. You got to go in and pull out your fortune sticker. It's going to have a manga written on it. Oh, you got bad fortune. You gotta
read. God.
Attack on Titan.
Yeah, you got to read Attack on Titan, like volume 18. Oh, no context.
I will say, if it helps with my ridiculous plan, one thing on my list is a random volume of a very funny manga that we all like. So,
that. Good to know. David, you should just have like a little simple spreadsheet for me to look at. So when we do this again, like I already know which ones are gone and which how many more there are to go. And
I've got a tab on the Yeah.
Okay. All right. Good.
You got to do that. Actually, do that shit like Battleship, and the ship's just like B6, and it's like, oh, sorry, you got an out of print manga that's 200 volumes of volume. That's gonna be.
I loved Battleship as a kid. Let's do it.
Oh yeah, yeah. So tense.
Oh.
All right. Good job, everyone.
Well, this has been an episode of Mangasplaining. Thank you all so much for listening. Thank you for. This is a fun book picking experience. I'm very excited about that. Yeah, we'll be back next week. I don't remember what we're reading, but it'll be in the outro, so that'll be fine. Thanks very much. See you soon.
This is a tough one because I hate hockey.
What is dedication?
The thing that drives me every day as a dad is Dariano. We call him Day Day for short. Every day he's hungry for something, whether it's attention, affection, knowledge. And there's this huge responsibility in making sure that when he's no longer under my wing, that he's a good person. I want him to be able to sit back one day and go, we worked together, we did a good job.
That's dedication. Find out more at fatherhood.gov. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.